Chapter 2. Samatha and Vipassana. Suppose, monk, a king had a border city with strong ramparts, walls and arches, and 6 gates. The gatekeeper there would be clever, competent, and intelligent, and would keep strangers out, but let acquaintances in. A swift pair of messengers coming from the eastern quarter would question that gatekeeper thus, "Where, friend, is the lord of the city?" "There he is, sirs. He is sitting in the middle at the crossroads." Then that swift pair of messengers would present a message in accordance with reality to the lord of the city and leave by the way they came. I have made up this simile to convey a meaning, and this is the meaning. City is a designation for this body, made up of the 4 great elements, produced from mother and father, built up from rice and porridge, subject to impermanence, to rubbing, wearing, breaking up, and dispersal. 6 gates is a designation for the 6 internal sense bases. Gatekeeper is a designation for mindfulness. Swift pair of messengers is a designation for samatha and vipassana. Lord of the city is a designation for consciousness. In the middle of the crossroads is a designation for the 4 great elements. Message in accordance with reality is a designation for nibbana. The way they came is a designation for the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha, Samyutta Nikaya 35-245. When we investigate the meaning of our meditation terminology, it's wise to proceed with a degree of caution. We are discussing highly abstract, rarefied states of consciousness, and such matters are not easy to pin down with mere words. Our languages are formed from what is around us, our concrete environment, and those things that are of pressing relevance. Gradually, words are divorced from their concrete origins and pressed into service for more abstract uses. This is why it's useful to consider how a word is used in ordinary language first, where we can determine a simple meaning with a high degree of clarity before approaching the more subtle usages. In ordinary usage, samatha means calming, settling, pacifying. For example, of disputes and litigations. Majjhima Nikaya 104.13. Here the meaning approaches cessation. The means of settling disputes in the Sangha exemplify how samatha and vipassana work together. The disputants should come together in harmony, thoroughly examine the issues in accordance with Dhamma, and unanimously agree on a solution. We thus find vipassana also used in a legalistic context. And when Prince Vipassi was born, the divine eye manifested to him as a result of past action, by means of which he saw for a league all around, both day and night. And when Prince Vipassi was born, he was unblinkingly watchful, like the deities of the Tavatisa. People said, "The prince is unblinkingly watchful," and so Prince Vipassi came to be called Vipassi. And then, when King Bandhuma was seated adjudicating a legal case, he sat Prince Vipassi on his lap and instructed him regarding the legal case. And Prince Vipassi, even while seated on his father's lap, having thoroughly investigated, drew a conclusion regarding the legal case by a logical method. And so Prince Vipassi was all the more called Vipassi. Digha Nikaya 14.1.37. Here, 2 aspects of vipassana are brought forth. First, the penetrative, clear-eyed observation of what is occurring in the present moment. And secondly, the ability to infer a correct conclusion by closely examining the evidence before one's eyes, understanding it in line with valid general principles. These 2 aspects of vipassana are mirrored in the context of dependent origination by knowledge regarding Dhamma, understanding each factor according to the 4 noble truths, and knowledge regarding entailment. Understanding that all those who see the Dhamma, past, present, and future, will see it in the same way. Samyutta Nikaya 12.343 and 12.34. Another similar kind of knowledge is called the knowledge of the regularity of natural principles. Understanding that the conditional relations between the factors always operate the same way. Samyutta Nikaya 12.20. The precise denotation of samatha and vipassana in the context of meditation can be derived from a passage quoted more fully below. Samatha is the steadying of the mind. It's settling, unifying, and concentrating in samadhi. It is therefore similar in meaning to unification of mind, the most distinctive mental quality of jhana or samadhi. Samyutta Nikaya 46:51, where samatha equals not many-pointedness. Avyagga, unscattered, an obvious synonym for one-pointedness. Vipassana is the seeing and exploring of activities. It therefore refers to wisdom in its refined mode of investigation into the nature of reality as experience. These definitions express the quintessence of samatha and vipassana. However, samatha and vipassana are elsewhere treated as a comprehensive summary of the meditative aspects of the path, and the next passage treats them as leading to the development of the mind and of wisdom, respectively. This implies that they may be taken in a more general sense as including those qualities of mind leading to peace and wisdom. They also occur as a pair in the suttas, and are a pair of mental qualities to be developed by means of the Eightfold Path. Monks, these two principles share in realization. What two? Samatha and vipassana. When samatha is developed, what purpose is achieved? The mind is developed. When the mind is developed, what purpose is achieved? Lust is abandoned. When vipassana is developed, what purpose is achieved? Understanding is developed. When understanding is developed, what purpose is achieved? Ignorance is abandoned. Monks, the mind tainted by lust is not released. Understanding tainted by ignorance is not developed. Thus, the release of heart is due to the fading away of lust. The release by understanding is due to the fading away of ignorance. Anguttara Nikaya 2.3.10. Sometimes the phrases release of heart and release by understanding denote different kinds of arahants distinguished by their giving chief emphasis to either samadhi or wisdom. Normally, however, as here, they point to two complementary aspects of the release of all arahants. Thus, samatha and vipassana function as a pair, not only in this preliminary training, but also right up to the ultimate liberation. This is why the Buddha called Nibbana the samatha of all activities. Emphasizing the samatha points to the stilling, tranquilizing, and pacifying of suffering. Notice that samatha brings about the fading of lust, vipassana the fading of ignorance. Lust is a term for the emotional aspects of the defilements. Ignorance is a term for the intellectual aspect. At their most general, then, samatha may be regarded as pertaining to emotional development, vipassana as pertaining to intellectual development. The terms emotional and intellectual are meant here in their broadest possible connotation. By using the word emotional, we no more mean being moody and impulsive than by intellectual we mean mere reasoning and rational thinking. Rather, we refer to that whole side of experience, half of our mind or world which deals with feelings and intuitions, the soft yin side, which deals with understanding and analysis, the penetrating yang side. All of us contain both of these aspects within us. Each of these aspects contains some good and some bad, and must be developed in a balanced way if we are to achieve liberation. We cannot enlighten only half our mind. Many similes can illustrate this mutual support. Vipassana only is like trying to cut down a tree with a razor blade. Samatha only is like using a hammer. Both together is like using a sharp axe, both penetrating and powerful. Or samatha is like the underside of a postage stamp. It sticks, while vipassana is like the top. It informs. Or samatha is like the left foot, vipassana like the right foot. One can only move one foot forward by leaning on the other. Or, vipassana is like the cool breeze at the mountaintop, and vipassana is like the view of the countryside. Or, samatha is like the hand which clings to the next rung up the ladder, vipassana like the hand which lets go of the rung below. This simile contains a warning. If one lets go of both ends before reaching the top, one is likely to end up as a crumpled heap at the foot of the ladder. The suttas invariably say that both samatha and vipassana are essential and should be developed. For example, here is a sutta where Venerable Ananda states that enlightenment must depend on some combination of samatha and vipassana. Friends, any monk or nun who declares arahantship in my presence has arrived there by four paths, or by one of them. What four? Here, friends, a monk develops samatha prior to vipassana. While he is developing samatha prior to vipassana, the path is born in him. He cultivates, develops, and makes much of that path. As he does so, his fetters are abandoned, and his inherent compulsions are eradicated. Again, friends, a monk develops vipassana prior to samatha. Again, friends, a monk develops samatha and vipassana yoked equally. Again, friends, a monk's mind is seized by restlessness for the Dhamma. When the mind settles down within, becomes steady, unified, and concentrated in samadhi, then the path is born in him. He cultivates, develops, and makes much of that path. As he does so, his fetters are abandoned, and his inherent compulsions are eradicated. Anguttara Nikaya 4.170. In this sutta, Venerable Ananda sets out a comprehensive fourfold classification of the sequence of practice. The basic sequence is common to all four modes. First, samatha and vipassana are developed. Then the path is born. Then the path is developed further. The only variation is the manner of preliminary practice of samatha and vipassana. The path here is obviously the Noble Eightfold Path. At its inception, this is the way to stream entry. This discourse says that all meditators who are to attain liberation will develop both samatha and vipassana before becoming a noble one. Some vipassana teachers try to interpret this passage as saying one can develop vipassana first and then samatha, as transcendental jhana, simultaneous with the arising of the path, or else that one develops vipassana until stream entry and then samatha to support the higher stages. Neither of these readings are supported by the text, which is perfectly clear in saying both samatha and vipassana are necessary before the arising of the noble path. Let us look a little closer at how these different modes are presented in the suttas. Examples of the first mode appear frequently throughout this work, so I will leave that aside for now. Vipassana prior to samatha is exemplified as follows. In this passage, imperturbable refers to the first two formless attainments. Again, monks, a noble disciple considers thus. Sensual pleasures, sensual perceptions, physical forms, perceptions of physical forms, both here and now, and in lives to come, are alike impermanent. What is impermanent is not worth relishing, not worth welcoming, not worth adhering to. When he practices in this way, and frequently abides thus, his mind becomes clear about this base. When there is full clarity, he attains to the imperturbable now, or he decides upon understanding. With the breakup of the body after death, it is possible that his onflowing consciousness will pass on to the imperturbable. Again, monks, a noble disciple gone to the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut considers thus, this is void of a self or of what belongs to a self. When he practices in this way and frequently abides thus, his mind becomes clear about this base. When there is full clarity, he attains to the base of nothingness now, or he decides upon understanding. With the breakup of the body after death, it is possible that his onflowing consciousness will pass on to the base of nothingness. Majjhima Nikaya 106.5.7. Although Bhikkhu Bodhi says that fourth jhana can be included here as imperturbable, the reflection on the dangers of physical form makes this unlikely. The contemplation of impermanence or not-self leads the mind to dispassion and non-attachment. This enables the meditator to reach the deep peace of samadhi. But this is not the final goal, as they are still reborn. The path of samatha and vipassana yoked equally is explicitly identified in only one place. Monks, when one knows and sees in accordance with reality the eyes, visible forms, eye consciousness, eye contact, feeling born of eye contact, then one is not inflamed by lust for these feelings. When one abides uninflamed by lust, unattached, unconfused, contemplating danger. Then the five aggregates associated with grasping are diminished for oneself in the future. And one's craving, which generates repeated existence, accompanied by relishing and lust, delighting here and there, is abandoned. One's bodily and mental troubles, torments, and fevers are abandoned, and one experiences bodily and mental bliss. Such a person's view is right view. Their intention is right intention. Their effort is right effort. Their mindfulness is right mindfulness. And their samadhi is right samadhi. But their bodily action, verbal action, and livelihood have been well purified earlier. Thus, the Noble Eightfold Path is fulfilled for them by development, and also the other wings to enlightenment. These two qualities, samatha and vipassana, are operating in them yoked evenly together. Majjhima Nikaya 149.9-10. As always, the practice requires right samadhi, i.e., the four jhanas. In the final of Ananda's four modes, the meditator seized by restlessness for Dhamma must turn to samatha for a cure. The Vasunimagga, however, identifies restlessness for Dhamma with the taints of vipassana and recommends more vipassana. How does he steady his mind within himself, settle it, unify it, and concentrate it in samadhi? Here, Ananda, he enters and abides in the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. Majjhima Nikaya 122.7 and others. This restlessness for Dhamma is probably the subtle fetter of restlessness remaining to be cut by the non-returner. It seems that if this restlessness is too strong, the meditator will overemphasize vipassana at the expense of samatha, whereas if the corresponding lust for form, jhana realms, and lust for formless, jhana realms, are too strong, they will overemphasize samatha at the expense of vipassana. These imbalances must be rectified if the path is to manifest. So all four modes presented by Ananda for realizing arahantship require harmony between samatha and vipassana. This is simply restating a basic principle that is found time and time again in the suttas. The interdependence of these two qualities is emphasized once again in the following sutta passage. A person who has samatha of the heart within himself, but no vipassana into principles pertaining to higher understanding. Note, the phrase pertaining to the higher understanding doesn't necessarily imply an advanced level of vipassana, but an understanding of impermanence, etc., rather than worldly understanding of action and rebirth, etc. Should approach one who has vipassana and inquire, how should activities be seen? How should they be explored? How should they be discerned with vipassana? And later, he can gain vipassana. A person who has vipassana into principles pertaining to higher understanding, but no samatha of the heart within himself, should approach one who has samatha and inquire, how should the mind be steadied? How should it be settled? How should it be unified? How should it be concentrated in samadhi? And later he can gain samatha. One who has neither should inquire about both, and should put forth extreme enthusiasm, effort, endeavor, exertion, unflagging mindfulness, and clear comprehension to acquire them. Just as if one's turban or hair were ablaze, one should put forth extreme effort to quench the flames. Anguttara Nikaya 10.54. One who has both established in these beneficial qualities should make further effort for the evaporation of the poisons. Anguttara Nikaya 4.94. Just as if, Nandaka, there were a four-legged animal with one leg stunted and short, it should thus be unfulfilled in that factor. So too, a monk who is faithful and virtuous, but does not gain samatha of the heart within himself, is unfulfilled in that factor. That factor should be fulfilled by him. A monk who has these three, but no vipassana in the principles pertaining to higher understanding, is unfulfilled in that factor. That factor should be fulfilled by him. Anguttara Nikaya 9.4. So all meditators should develop both samatha and vipassana, using a variety of strategies to overcome the diversity of defilements. By a monk established in these five principles, that is, good friendship, virtue of the code of conduct, conversation on Dhamma, energy, wisdom. Four principles should be further developed. Meditation on ugliness should be developed to abandon lust. Loving kindness should be developed to abandon anger. Mindfulness of breathing should be developed to cut off thinking. The perception of impermanence should be developed to eradicate the conceit, I am. Udana 4.1. Bearing in mind this basic understanding of samatha and vipassana, we now go on to examine the three frameworks for practice referred to above. Each of these frameworks restates the balance and harmony between these emotional and intellectual qualities. There is no jhana for one without wisdom, no wisdom for one without jhana. But for one with both jhana and wisdom, nibbana is surely near. Dhammapada 372.